You couldn't run a convoy up there with just two or three ships. You had to
Indeed.
gather enough ships to form a convoy, which was averaging about 20 to 24 ships. We had about 10 Plough-class corvettes for starters, as escorts, with destroyers on, with battleships. We got everything. Well, you're not going to send two merchant ships up with stuff with all that lot, are you?
No, it's not worth it.
You're going to have to muster a convoy up in which they pick Lockyer to do it. I mean, some of them that were in Lockyer, we might have been 2 or 3 weeks waiting to get enough for the convoy. I mean, they didn't all just get there that day and sail. They might have been 3 weeks, a month, anything there. It's just finding out how long someone had to stop. Because they did get bombed up there as well by the Germans, didn't they?
Couple of occasions.
Yeah.
Most famously, they bombed the rock in the middle of Loch instead of a ship. It was on the absolute limit of range
It
for
was,
the
yeah.
long-range ones from Norway.
Yeah, but even the long-range ones couldn't carry
Enough.
a cargo. The ones we used to get over a lot, we used to call them flying shoes. And they were like a flying boat. They got a three-engine thing with a big float underneath. And they were spotting for the convoys, you know what I mean?
Would you like to tell us a bit about your model? When did you make it?
Oh, it's quite a lot of years ago now, but it's been in the Air Museum at Grimsby. Well, it's not Grimsby actually, it's a place called Waltham, and it's been in there 40 years.
How long after the war did you make it?
Oh, I haven't a clue. I've been making them all, for years, so a lot of years. I mean, I've made about 12 to 15 of them, something like that.
Why did you make the activity, Frank, particularly?
Well, I made it because it was a ship I was on for the Arctic convoys, wasn't it?
Because the others are models of a class, whereas that one's a very specific ship, isn't it? Probably
That this
unique.
one is, yeah.
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 Is that probably your most memorable experience of Russian convoys, do you think?
Oh, aye, definitely. I mean, I served on activity on Russian convoys. I was on a destroyer for one trip, but we had to turn back. Bad weather. Destroyers couldn't stand the bad weather. And then we replaced the Dasher. The Dasher, she went on convoys, and she got it, I don't know where, somewhere near Iceland anyway. And bad weather tore her ripped out the side, 70 foot long.
Yes.
And we had to take her back, you know, of course. Couldn't stand the weather. Took her back to Dundee, and she was in the same dock as we were in. We had joined the activity, like. But I went up, well, there were 400 of us went up all together. And we sort of recommissioned the ship, it weren't ready.
So did you replace the Dasher? Did you replace the
Yeah,
ship
we
to
did,
join the convoys? Because you were allocated to go somewhere else, weren't you?
It was on Atlantic convoys, really. That's what we were picked up for.
And then
We were
suddenly you found
going to
yourself.
Halifax, yeah.
Yeah, and suddenly you found yourself
Going
taking
to
the
Russia.
place of a.
Went to Russia, yeah.
How long did it take then to do a trip?
Well, to Russia.
Yeah, the convoy, was it days, weeks?
Oh no, it took about 14 days, I would think, something like that. But you had to wait in Archangel until you got a full convoy to bring back.
I'm with you.
See?
Minutes away from the front with Norway for
Yeah,
aircraft coming over.
it was, yeah. Well, I know one convoy we were on. It was two of us together. There was a tracker and us. And between us, we got rid of six U-boats.
We checked up on the activity, well, the action report from the convoys that yourself was on.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was one of them was really interesting. The number of U-boat attacks on
Yeah.
one of them was really quite
Yeah,
interesting.
we had quite a lot. But on out one of our return convoys, HMS Bluebell was sunk. We watched that go down, that ship, and everybody went mad. The carriers sent all the planes up with the depth charges on them. They fetched it to the surface. Mm-hmm. And then they bombarded it, knocked it down, so there were no survivors.
Is that the one? What about that one where you're seen? There's a boat coming into the side of the activity with.
That was Bluebell.
Covered in oil.
That's Bluebell. Well, the Bluebell, that was sunk by this U-boat. I forget what number U-boat is now, but it was sunk by them. And there's only two survivors. But by the time they got them to the ships, that was one of the fleet carriers, which were useless. They were too big. They wanted too many escorts, and they couldn't afford having too many escorts on. Because what they did, they formed up either side of the ship, so that if they got torpedoed, they'd catch it. But they were too expensive. They had albacores them, and they were the most useless plane they'd ever had, apparently.
We've seen some of the video footage of the ships going through the rough weather, and you see big aircraft carriers pitching and rolling like this.
Oh yeah, they were.
It's not a naturally tenable position for an aircraft carrier.
They can't definitely land on any rough sea.
Well, I always said that them pilots that took off on those anyway, they all like to have VC. I mean, decks were like that and they were taking off. And then, of course, they were going up, and if they timed it wrong, it'd be back up again and the plane was straight into it. You see them planes, the Hurricane, the Scrappers. Well, all they had to do was ditch in the sea. Can you imagine ditching in the sea? There's no chance, has there?
No, a slightly modified Hurricane called a Hurricat being launched off the catapult.
Yeah.
We have a fairly detailed model of the bow of one of these boats with the Hurricane and everything sat on it. And
it's the Empire boats, we call them, didn't they? But, you see, that was before these escort carriers came in. They were in such a demand, the escort carriers, you never got any leave off them.
We've got a few pictures, have we not, Frank, I think I've ever gotten from you, showing a number of ships in the dock and flares going off when the war finished. Mm-hmm. And you tried that, that was taken from the activity.
But that was a Japanese thing.
That was a Japanese thing. Just noticed, I've just asked Frank before you came, because these are some of my father's pictures.
Wow.
You know, and that's what we used to do on the deck.
Oh yeah, boxing.
Boxing.
You used to have competitions on the decks.
Oh yeah, they did. Yeah.
We've got some of the nice pictures of at Christmas time where they've made snowmen on deck.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the other thing which I found fascinating, you know, the crossing the Arctic, they have a ceremony on board, and there's a lot of personal photographs of dressing up as Neptune and getting dunked and.
Mm.
I don't exactly know what the ceremony was, Frank.
Crossing the Mediterranean.
There's a similar ceremony for the first time you cross the equator as well.
That's the one he's on about.
Mm.
You won't dip anybody in the sea on Arctic convoy.
No.
Not when.
A bit harsh.
What was it about that, Frank? What did you do? Just say some words, or did you have a sing, just drink?
First bloke that used to go in used to be captain. They'd go and grab him and throw him in.
In the water?
they had a big pond on the ship.
Right.
Yeah.
And why don't you all got dressed up?
Yeah, dressed up like Neptune's men. Yeah.
And who organised all that?
Well, you got an entertainment officer and all these people, they organised it between them. But Arctic convoys, you didn't do out like that.
No.
No, you just got that certificate.
Because of the weather.
Because it's 50 below zero in places.
Yes.
That's about three times as much as what it freezes.
Did you have proper clothes to wear?
No.
Didn't you have Arctic clothes?
No. Didn't have a lot of that in them days.
We've got a few duffel coats and a deck.
Them duffel coats and that were it.
Guessing it wasn't very effective.
They weren't effective in this country in winter.
What about your hands?
The deck coats ever so handy.
Well, yeah, if you ever touched anything metal, they stuck to it.
Yeah. So you just had ordinary gloves effectively, did you?
Yeah, well, you had to do it here. But, I mean, the inside the guns, we had to wrap the guns in hot water tubing.
Yes.
You know, at the engine room, we get hot water from
pump
the engine.
Pump water into
pump
the
water
sleeve.
Up.
Yeah.
But by the time it got there, it was just aerated. But the Oerlikons were very good gun for that. The 4-inch gun were useless, a waste of time.
Why was that, Frank?
Well, the barrels were just arse up inside.
Because it was so small, it blocked.
With being small, with 20mm side, you never arsed up, you see. Mm. But the bigger guns, the barrel used to arse up, you had to wrap them with, like, hose pipe.
Yes.
With steam in it.
And put steam through it, yes.
And hope for the best.
Yes.
But if you tried to fire it, it would blow the breech off.
Yes.
Kill all the occupants.
Yes. Mm. So how did you get on for washing and things like that?
Well, you didn't wash.
You just kind of...
You never washed. It was too cold to wash.
Even below decks where you slept?
Yeah, even then, yeah. Mm.
So, pretty smelly at the end of a couple of weeks.
Well, after six weeks, which... By the time you'd been there and back, about 6 weeks, you used to finish up at the housing centre in Scapa.
You?
You never had a wash or anything.
Was that like a formal de-lousing?
Well, I suppose so, really.
Or did you just jump in the sea?
Yeah, you got all sorts of bloody diseases.
What were you eating on the ship?
Eating?
What were you eating?
Eating?
Yeah.
I don't know, to be truthful. That moment, nothing very good, I can assure you. Yeah. Well, you couldn't, you see. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get it, could you?
How many times did you eat a day, you know?
Well, if you're watch keeping, you virtually had one main meal. Mm-hmm. And most of the crew were watch keeping anyway. So,
yes.
You know, you had the 8 to 12, 12 to 4, then you had the two dog watches, which split you two. Yeah, I mean, you've got a crew there. The cooks are working virtually 24 hours a day.
So take the different shifts.
Hmm?
Take the different, you don't call them shifts, do you, what you call them?
Yeah, well, no.
Watches.
Hmm. Yeah. There were some of them carriers that Chinese on, funny enough.
Did they?
Hmm.
Were they good cooks?
I have no idea.
No, you didn't
have any. I never got on one, to be truthful, Adam. No, we had one lad, they were frying fish and chips or whatever, and the weather was that bad, his arm went straight into a big tub of fat.
Oh, did it?
And he lost his arm weight, yeah.
Oh, wow. So, did you have kind of recognisable food, or, you know, they made stews and fish and chips and things like that, did they?
Yes, if they could. It all depended on weather, didn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, really. Yes.
And if you were 14 days at sea through the Arctic, the seas were aggressive, weren't they? It makes you wonder how you could stand up and eat.
Well, that was a problem, you see. Well, you see that, you've got a picture somewhere of them carriers dipping its nose in, haven't you?
Mm.
You know.
We have video footage of it somewhere.
Yeah.
It's not with us, it's on my computer at home.
Yeah.
There was, I think it was the son of one of the admirals or one of the captains or something. Narrated video footage that had been shot on the convoys.
Yeah.
So this is something like a 15-minute video.
Yeah.
With a narration of all what's happening.
Yeah.
We showed that at one of our events a couple of years back.
Yeah.
Taking the time.
Mm. Mm. So all of it period footage.
And what have you done? Convert it into digital or something?
Well, we were handed it in digital, and there was an audio track to accompany it, and I had to sit down and edit it all together.
Right.
And came up with a video that can be shown.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, you've got to, haven't you, really? You've got to, yeah. But, I mean, them Arctic convoys, there were never any American, you know, ships on, warships, I mean.
Mm.
You never see any of them.
They were just sending over the merchant vessels.
They send the merchant vessels up, and we were escorting them.
Mm.
And that's why they were going into Loch Uey, most of them, because some of them discharged their cargoes onto British ships in Loch Uey.
Why did they do that, Frank?
Hey, because the Liberty ships couldn't stand the weather.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Is that because they were built differently? Is the
class? Well, they were them 10-day ships, weren't they? They called them. They were put together in 10 days, weren't they? I mean, some of them liberty ships had a concrete engine bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they really?
They couldn't stand the weather, and their tankers, they used to bring them into this country and used to weld a big skirt right round them to hold them together.
Because they want to see it break them in half.
Well, they would. I mean, the Dasher was American, and it ripped a 70-foot gash down the side of it.
Yes.
So you did.
Wow. Just debris.
And that was before it got to Iceland. So you can imagine when it got worse up Bear Island, what it was like.
And if you start hitting chunks of ice, it'll be making holes in it.
Hmm?
You start hitting chunks of ice, it'll be making holes in your ship.
Well, I don't need
any debris in the sea, I suppose.
Yeah.
If it was thinly,
it'll rip them apart. Ice will.
Hmm.
It was bad weather that made the Welsh come a cropper, wasn't it?
But
that was
at Lochiel. That was just in the north of Scotland.
What's that? Yeah.
The Welsh, when the Welsh went down, that was just a storm in the north of Scotland.
Yeah. Mm.
What was it like below decks, Frank? I mean, did you have 10 or 15 people in one? Were you in beds or were you in hammocks?
Hammocks. Yeah. Occasionally some Americans went, like, obviously, but they didn't do a lot of that.
Yeah.
Well, we was based up in Scapa.
Yeah.
And we used to come down and pick the convoy up from, you know, outside Lockheed and escort it all the way to Russia.
Right. Mm. Frank, the activity went all over the world, Pacific, Atlantic.
Oh, yes, it did, yeah.
Would you say that comparatively that trip on the Arctic convoy was, as they say, just about the worst?
It was definitely, there's no doubt about that. I mean, you were getting waves 13, 40 foot high. Yeah. Well, you've got pictures of it, haven't you? Mm. And see them, yeah, with the carriers dipping the nose right like that.
How do you tether the aeroplanes? Are they all tethered underneath the decks? Tied down or something?
We used to have them tied down on the deck.
Did you?
Well, they had ring bolts on the back end of the activity.
Yeah.
And they used to lash them down, and they used to put some like barriers up to stop the wind.
Because they were very fragile anyway, weren't they?
Well, all that. But them Martlets were a marvellous little plane, you know.
Yes.
In fact, they stood a lot of armour.
Did they?
Mm.
Quite sturdy, really.
Well, they got like... The undercarriage weren't just like an ordinary undercarriage, it was like scissor things. And the plane could tip over like that, and the wheels would still be level on the deck, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's real marvellous. We've had them landing on when one of the wing tips has touched the deck.
Yeah. Wow.
But I said them pilots were either nutcases or something, because, you know, if you think about it, you're coming into land about 100 miles an hour and skidding along a flight deck. You know what I mean?
The only thing that stopped you was that rope pole?
Well, the rest of wires.
Rest of wires.
Yeah, but sometimes the hook pulled off. If they're coming that fast, the tremendous pull on them, you know.
Yes, and the hook came off the plane.
And then the plane went to the other side.
All right. Goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
So below decks, did you kind of sleep all together, or what?
Oh no, we all had different mess decks.
Did you? Different mess
decks? I was in flight deck party on that, and that we had a mess on our own. And then they're all different engineers, and they were all separate. Well, you got the plans on the. We told you where they are.
All right, so there's lots of different sleeping areas. Mm. And you kind of slept with your team.
Well, when you think about it afterwards, you know, you think, bloody hell, with all these depth charges on, we've got all them on.
Yes, on the ship.
Yeah, we've got torpedoes on, we've got all the armaments, aviation fuel.
Yes.
When you think of that after, you think, bloody hell, it's a floating bomb, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's what happened with the Dasher, it just blew up.
Yes.
That would mean that you are... So sort of the first ships to be targeted would then be the tankers and yourselves.
Mm.
the first ships to be targeted by the enemy would be the tankers and yourselves.
We would target them first because we got aircraft on. You've more chance of shooting a plane down with an aircraft and a fighter plane going up, haven't you, than having a machine gun firing at you. So the carriers were the first target.
Because the planes used to go and intercept.
Yeah, they go and intercept, you see, and knock them out of the sky, which ours did.
Did the planes have torpedoes as well for you?
Yeah, Swordfish did.
Swordfish, that was their job.
But they had depth charges as well, which was more effective.
Was it?
Yeah, you could drop them on submarines, you see.
Yeah. Did you ever pick any of the U-boat crews up that were?
No, never.
Is that because they just sank or because?
Well, they wouldn't have it. They haven't got no chance of surviving in that water anyway.
No.
And of course, after that deal with Bluebell and one or two more different ships, you know, and that was it.
What was that about?
No survivors.
What was the Bluebell about?
It was sunk with all hands.
Was it?
Mm. His dad was it. He'd see it go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's we saw it go. All of us. I think if we'd be many more rushing down to port side, the only ship had capsized.
Yes.
Hmm. Yeah.
And there was no survivors from that at all?
No. There were two survivors picked up, but they only lasted half an hour.
Did they? Because of the cold?
Well, your blood froze, didn't it?
Yeah.
If your blood's not circulating, you've had it, haven't you?
Goodness, difficult to imagine all that, Frank.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. But when you think of something, I mean, our freezers, what do they? These modern freezers, they don't go to 50 below,
well,
do they?
They don't.
And the water up there was 50 below at times.
Mm.
Well, so if you stood there long enough, and you saw that with that film of Jeremy Clarkson when that bloke went through, didn't you, with that ice on the water. Mm. I mean, that was static. That was the sea, that, and it was free. Even the sea were free, and I went salt water freezer. It's cold, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Which port did you sail to? Was it Murmansk or Archangel?
No, we went to Murmansk.
Murmansk.
We took the ship to Murmansk, and then we moved across to the other side to wait.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we had to take a full load of ships back.
But he went out full of every armament and
whatever. Yeah.
Came back empty, did you?
They came back empty, the ships, you see, and we escorted them back.
Yes.
But they were more important, actually, than the contents of the ship to us. Because without the ships, you couldn't have got there much to Russia, could you?
Mm.
And the Liberty ships couldn't stand up to it anyway.
The logistics of what went out there is absolutely amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
you kind of read and you just don't realise the quantities of tanks, armoured vehicles, you know, armaments. It's phenomenal, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah. Yeah.
Thank goodness, if they hadn't, who's to say how?
Well, if they hadn't, Russia had lost the war, Germany had took over.
That would have left us in a difficult situation.
He's been speaking German, I said English.
Well,
it would.
Well, if they
well, they were only 4 miles from Murmansk, you know, at the finish.
The Germans.
Yeah, before they got turned back. Yeah. There's quite a lot of some of them ships we took up were sunk in the harbour, you know.
Really? Right. Attacked by planes.
Yeah. Well, activity anti-aircraft ship while they were there, because we got all them Orbicans on.
And were you ever attacked in Archangel?
Oh, aye, yeah. Yeah.
Can you remember how many trips you made, Frank? To Murmansk?
I done four altogether.
Yeah.
Mm, you won't tell that to do anymore. That was it.
Yeah.
Did you ever make it ashore
Oh yeah, went to shore. That was the people.
Yeah. Do you remember?
A bit scared of you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you hadn't got naval uniform on because it, obviously the weather. You got blowing great duffel coats and everything. So, but I think after a bit they got used to us, and especially taking food, they were starving, you know, people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the bit that isn't well publicised.
The interaction with the Russian people.
Oh, no, the plight of the Russians.
There's a picture in that book there about the Russians, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Right at back end. Sure there is. That's it. One in there somewhere.
Yeah. Yep, yeah, that's Russians.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go ashore to go for a drink or something, or just have a look around?
Well, I don't think there were any place you could have a drink anyway.
So we basically
just went to have a look round more than anything.
And perhaps take up some bits and
well,
pieces.
When you pulled into Archangel, after escorting the convoy, we parked up there, and within 24 hours, the sea was solid.
Right.
And you could walk ashore.
Is that right?
Yeah. And when we shifted back, you had to get the icebreakers in.
So, goodness.
Yeah.
I understand why people don't talk about it very much. My father never mentioned anything.
Well, they wouldn't do, no, you don't.
It's just, certainly not glamorous at all, is it?
No.
What was it like then, Murmansk?
Well, it's hard to say because you never saw anybody. It's like a deserted town. I mean, you don't go out walking in streets when it's 20 degrees below zero, do you?
Was it very industrialised?
Oh, yeah, well.
And run down. I know my man from my own work, and there it was very industrial and very run down.
Well, at that time, most of the dockyard workers were women.
Really, really?
Mm. Well, all the men are going to fight, aren't they?
What were they doing? Building ships?
No, offloading the cargo.
Oh, I see, yeah.
If I recall correctly from the convoy documentation, I believe one of the trips the activity made was just an empty run of escorts heading up to retrieve ships.
When was this?
It was around the time that you were there.
Yeah.
I wish I'd brought the book with me.
Yeah.
But there was an interesting run in which there was a convoy returned from Russia without one going up. There was a lot of ships stranded in Russia.
Yeah, we brought a lot back.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
Did you go out, up? Did you go empty to bring them back, or did you go with another convoy and then...
No, we took a convoy up first.
Mm.
Oh, no, you never...
It'd be
too expensive, wouldn't it?
That's interesting.
Ships up. But you know what? The funny thing about all is that there's one, I think the picture in there, I'm not sure about that, but this American heavy cruiser, was given to Russia.
Right.
And we escorted that, and the Royal Sovereign battleship was given to Russia at the same time. And I don't know what's in there or not.
And you kind of made sure it got there safely.
Yeah, but there were also 12... twelve submarines, and the RAF attacked them
because they thought they were
sunk them. Yeah,
I don't know whether that's documented.
No, it won't be.
But it will be somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure it's in that.
Here's the entry of the Americans into the war.
Yeah.
American ships were commanded by Rear Admiral Robert C. Griffin, Duke of York, USS Battleship Washington, seen here in company with HMS Duke of York.
Hmm. They didn't put many battleships on Russian convoys, though.
Mm.
They were no good.
What was the relationship like on board these ships, these journeys, between the commissioned officers and the captain and the crew?
You mean the Russians?
No, with, you know, Captain Willoughby, I think, was one of them.
Oh, he was a gentleman, that fellow.
Yeah, I mean, did you see him? Was he active?
Oh, yeah, captain? Very active.
So, you know, he wasn't kind of aloof and...
No, no. The Captain Willoughby was a proper gentleman, and we'd done after his first convoy. The ship was in such a mess, rusted and everything. They said, we're going to paint ship before we move again, and all hands to paint, like, you know, when we got back into Greenock. And I can also remember him as walking down the flight, and these officers were stood in. He said, what are you gentlemen doing? They said, well, officers don't work. He said, they work on my ship. I can also remember him saying that. They work on my ship, either get some overalls on or get off. Yeah, he said, it's all, I said all hands, and I meant it. And he went and got a, he got to send some overalls and a pot of paint. And I said, which stage in shall I go on, bosun? Yeah.
So he was well regarded.
Oh, he was well regarded. By the crew. Yeah.
And were the officers as well? Or, you know.
Yeah, they varied, didn't they? Yeah.
Because you were all in a pretty horrendous thing together.
That's true enough. Yeah. But how will it be? That picture. I don't know if you've got it.
I've got pictures of it.
Willoughby's on the flight deck of it.
Yes.
With Major Brown.
With Major Brown, that's right.
He was in charge of the plane.
And if you look at this ship, there isn't a
glass
covered area. This is
an open top.
An open.
Yeah.
You know, literally, you came up some steps into that and you were open to the, to the world, effectively. And, not nowadays, where they have glass front.
Well, you see, apart from that, you know, the flight deck itself, along either side were netting.
Yes.
For you to dive into after all the planes taking off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, just outboard of the outboard?
Yeah, you can see, yeah. Some picture somewhere. Yeah. Have you seen that about? I'm sure it's in there somewhere near the. I would think it's near.
That's the bit about the Americans there.
That's what.
That's the bit about the Americans there.
Yeah, that one bit. But this one's about the Royal Sovereign battleship. What's that one? What you're looking at? Royal Sovereign. I'm sure it's in there.
Looking for it. I'll find it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Russians have commemorated those that were participating in these convoys.
Can't shoot the planes, I'm not.
Frank?
You are.
The Russians have commemorated the Russian convoys and the veterans almost regularly since the war. Every 10 years or 5 years.
Every 10 years.
They've issued a commemorative medal and, well, invited you to the embassy recently. They seem to have held that particular episode or that part of the war in good regard, don't they?
Well, they admit that if it hadn't been them convoys, Russia would have been beaten.
Yes.
Because they call it the Great Patriotic War. Russians do.
Of course, they've also just unveiled that big monument in St. Petersburg.
Yes.
Which is really quite impressive. Our chairman went to. Did was there really? For the unveiling. Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Was that by invitation?
I think it was.
It says also. Does it say also
also transferred one cruiser, 8 destroyers, 4 submarines, one of which was later sunk in error by RAF Liberator.
Yeah. And what did it say, Milwaukee?
No, it doesn't mention Milwaukee there.
No. That's it. There's somewhere, I don't know where.
Either way.
It don't matter. When that ship come back, they scrapped it. The Russians gave it back at the end of the war. And they took it to the scrapyard and said it was such a filthy state.
There's one sloop and one destroyer still in original condition in Egypt.
Is there really?
Yeah. Which?
HMS Wimbrel. It's one of them. Is it Zenith?
I think it's the Zenith.
Wimble sounds like an American thing.
I don't think it was.
No, I think it was a British one.
Yeah. Your routine. You'd wake up on the ship, and what was the rest of the day? You were watchkeeping most of the day.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was watchkeeping until action stations went, and then everybody was involved then.
I see.
An
alarm would sound and everybody would be up and...
Yeah, you'd be at station, yeah.
Right.
And what was watchkeeping, Frank? Did you kind of have binoculars and a...
Well, the ship was split up into, you know, different groups, like... So there's not... you know, they're not... You're resting, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't working 8 hours on and 8 off, but you were working a routine... Which would be a normal ship routine.
When you say watch, is that lookout? You're looking out for
watchkeepers.
Yes.
Oh no, not necessarily. You've got when you're watchkeeping, you still man the guns. But instead of having a full gun crew, one you'd probably have only two or three.
Until the alarms went off.
Until the alarms went off. Yeah.
And how many were in a full gun crew?
Well, there again, it's all depend. Orlikans had probably four or three to four.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one gunner. You see, you control the turrets and everything, and then you had the others loading the ammunition into the. You see, Orlikans had drums of ammunition.
Right.
And you had one.
Is that the gun that you were manning?
Right.
Is that the gun that you were manning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. His dad did say.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah.
But what was this thing about cordite and all that? How did that work?
What do you mean?
Well, you said you loaded cordite.
Yeah, talk us
through that. Oh, that was on the big. That's on the big ships. That
mm-hmm.
on the big guns.
Well, how did that work, Frank?
It was in bags, like canvas bags.
Mm-hmm.
What on same as the Berwick, you put your shell in first, rammed it home.
Yes.
And then you put your cordite bags came up from at the ammunition locker.
Mm-hmm.
And they were rammed in. It all depended what they were shooting at with them, because if they were going a long distance, they'd probably have to put four bags in.
Right.
If they were going a short distance, they'd just put one in.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the bloke up in the turret and the rangefinder, he'd tell them exactly what to load.
Right.
And then he'd watch this. I never saw one myself, but they did say that on those turrets you could watch the shell going through the air.
Could you? And then
could alter the range to suit.
You put this thing in at the end and it fires the...
Well, you put this... The gun layer, actually, he put the... whatever they wanted in it. If they was going to fire, they normally fire them up on the rangefinder itself. They did the firing as well.
Oh, would you?
But if they wanted you to do it locally, they'd tell you that you'd fit a percussion cap in then.
Yes.
Which was like a three or three bullet.
Okay.
You put that in. And then you pull the string.
Bang.
Yeah. Well, the gun lid had a belt round with all the cartridges in.
Uh-huh.
And that's on the big guns we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it had different ones, you see. Ones he could fire off the bridge, off the control of the
mm-hmm.
tower, and ones he had to fire. And them he had to fire got same as a 303 bullet.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like them, and you fired the trigger. It was a shooting lock, they called it.
Were you ever scared, Frank?
Hey?
Were you ever scared? You know, I'm sure you were. I mean, it's a silly question.
I mean,
were you... You know, did you go through phases when you were being attacked where you were, you know, it's...
Oh, I don't think you took any notice when you were being attacked. I think it's waiting that makes it worse.
Mm.
I don't think... Once the aircraft or whatever they were attacking you, you forgot everything and had to go at them because you knew you got the gear to do it with.
Mm. How long were your action stations for if there was activity spotted?
Well, you never know. It might have been all day.
Mm-hmm.
You never know when the planes came over or whatever, or the U-boats were spotted. And then our swordfish used to take off then.
Mm-hmm.
They used to chase the U-boats. And of course, they used to attack them themselves, like they used to drop the depth charges on them.
Mm-hmm.
So you had no idea how long you were going to be there once action stations?
Oh, no, no.
Was it day and night as well?
It was sometimes, because they're only based in Norway, you know.
Yes.
They're only stone's throw away.
How did you get on at night with your sword fishing? How do they take off and land at night?
That's your best sort of his pilots about that. They did. They could take off at night, yeah.
They didn't have landing lights and.
We deck landing lights on. We had fun to come back.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're only small things. You know, they were lights, like, but they weren't massive things. But they could see them in swordfish, so I can direct them down.
Could they?
The batsmen were there with his bats mashing, fetching them in.
Were you boats more dangerous at night than the other day? Because you only noticed them, didn't you? When they surfaced, didn't you?
Well, I can't tell you, to be truthful. I mean, they were attacking us all the time.
So. Think of a U-boat captain, you think, I'll only go up when it's dark and no one will see me.
Okay.
Trouble isn't, it's harder for them to see you as well.
Hmm?
Good thinking. But if it, you know, normally these ships are quite well lit, aren't they?
Mm. Not in the convoys, they weren't. No. In the convoys, it was nearly blackout.
A complete blackout.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
But if you're an aircraft carrier, you need.
It is not a day attacker, you know, which is anything.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was Archangel like?
It was a little village. Place, but you know, it's. I can remember seeing the church steeple there, and one time when we went to show, you couldn't see it because it was buried in snow. I just remember that. But it's only a small place.
Just a base, really?
Yeah, it was a base for the crews of the Russian ships and that.
And were you tied up and harboured, or were you like just in...
No, we were anchored out.
And you had to make to shore boats?
Well, you could walk ashore after 24 hours. Yeah. So you just froze up. But there were no, we never saw any men there at all because, as Emma said, they'd all gone to fight, hadn't they?
Interesting, that's right.
Isn't it?
Do the Russian women get any recognition for their contribution these days?
I don't know, to be truthful, but they did a wonderful job. They were, I mean, on the docks at Murmansk, you know, they're all women. It was. Offloading the ships.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. What we saw, anyway. Yeah. How many million did they lose?
About 27,
wasn't it? Something shocking like that.
It was a hell of a lot, weren't it?
Hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah.
What did they, once they unloaded the cargo, what were they doing with it? Did you ever get to see that?
We never saw what happened to it, no.
After it was unloaded?
Mm-hmm. No. Well, in fact, we didn't even know what was on some of the ships. It's only what we learned out afterwards that there were a lot of tanks, American, them Sherman tanks, there were quite a lot of them too.
They've just been raising some of those.
Did you say raising some?
The Russians have raised some Sherman tanks. I think they've taken them to. Yeah, they've taken them to Murmansk, I think.
Yeah.
The museum there, they've put them in, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Very good.
Mm.
Well, I mean, I should imagine, you know, on one ship you'd probably get about 40, 50 tanks on.
So if one ship goes down, you've got a whole lot of tanks to salvage.
Yeah.
Well, those waters are not easy to salvage.
Not an easy job, will it?
At the same time, though, stuff lasts a lot longer.
Well, what about that deal with that chap, Brink, taking all those... There were eight ships he took to Russia, didn't he? Well, that Jeremy Clark.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Mm. You know what I mean?
That was after the convoy scattered.
Yeah.
Yes.
There was one guy shepherding.
But what about that bloke who scattered it? Did you hear about him?
Yes.
Huh? He died a year after, didn't he?
Mm.
He got a brain tumour.
Yes.
That's right.
Hey?
Didn't have a chance to fully explain things.
Well, they covered up for him, didn't they?
He was left in an awkward position.
Hmm.
He was put in an awkward position.
Well, I don't see how he was, really. I can never weigh that up. I mean, you can't scatter a convoy of escorts and leave all the ships, can you, really?
Well, the fear was that the Tirpitz was...
Yeah, all right, so it was a Sharnos, it was actually, I think.
Right, okay.
But we got a battleship there at the time which could tackle it on its own, and escorts like little flower class corvettes. They couldn't tackle anything like that. I don't know what his thinking was, really. I mean, you've got a convoy of all them ships with all that stuff, and then the escorts to scatter. I mean, even the ship's captains didn't know.
They weren't happy about it, were they?
Yeah. Well, they didn't know about it, you know. It turns out it was kept quiet. It had a brain tumour, that fella, and he shouldn't have been there anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, medical science wasn't quite what it is today.
No, but they must have known something. I know it wasn't, but they must have known something.
You can find, Frank, that decisions were made that were incomprehensible after the event. All across the war. Because it can't be easy to make decisions about things that are unpredictable. I'm sure a lot of our soldiers...
Yeah, but the thing about all this, and I always say that these people in London, they don't see what's happening out on the ocean, do they?
No.
I mean, the bloke in charge of the convoy, who's in charge of that particular convoy, should have the knowledge and be able to say, look, we're doing it this way or that way, because he could see what was going on. But that why was he overruled?
Well, that wasn't the way it was then, was it?
Well, it'll make you wonder, doesn't it? Well, they altered it just after, though, didn't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you can't learn by these things.
Yeah, but it costs a lot of lives.
Well, a lot of lives were lost. People were sent on missions that were almost guaranteed to fail for all sorts of reasons, and it's part of the war, I suppose. Do you think are you pleased that the Russians commemorate these Arctic convoys? Does it make you feel good about it?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I do, because they're the only ones that ever has done. They're the only ones that's appreciated what we're doing. Even our country didn't appreciate it. And it was only through Mr. Putin intervening that we got that medal, didn't we? That Russian medal 70 years after.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't give us one during the war. I don't know, it's politicians, isn't it? You don't know how they think, do you?
Indeed not.
Yeah, well, I don't think they do anyway.
That's another discussion.
No, I mean, there's a good example here. Was we were doing Atlantic convoys, all right, we got Atlantic Star. I presume your dad's got that, hasn't he?
He has, yes.
Yeah.
The Pacific Bar.
Right. And then we did Mediterranean convoys. Which your dad never got medal for, did he?
No.
He didn't get that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it, but I won't wear it, because I think that medal issue was for the soldiers, me. I don't think it was for the Navy at all. I think it was ridiculous. Then they started saying, they were doing Malta convoys. They didn't get a medal for that, anybody?
Mm-hmm. They did, there were over 400 convoy series ran during the war.
Yeah.
400 separate convoy missions run.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We done about 50 or 60 ourselves.
No, I don't mean individual trips. I mean just 400 convoy series. It's like 400 different campaigns.
It's a different parts of the world. Yes.
Like the Mediterranean, Malta, Atlantic, Arctic.
Yeah.
There were 400 of them.
Yeah.
Yes.
So to commemorate each of them is
rather a
large undertaking.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Unless, of course, they could group them together and give them some of their own identity.
Well, that's it, yeah.
And then we cover all 400 campaigns.
And group them by region or something, yeah.
Well, not even that, just for those who supported relief of other countries through convoys.
Mm.
just takes a bit of lateral thinking, doesn't it?
Mm.
But I think if you were to categorise all the different aspects of war, it would be extremely difficult.
Yeah. Mm.
To commemorate all of them effectively.
Well, I mean,
so they were always going to fail, weren't
well, they made a medal for France and Germany, didn't they?
They made a
medal for France and Germany, so.
Did they?
Hmm. Yeah.
What was that for, Frank?
Well, that was virtually for D-Day landings, weren't it? After when they conquered Germany. And
so people who went into Germany, they got.
Yeah. Aye, but you know those ships that were firing shells on D-Day,
yes.
They got it.
Yes.
But they'd never been ashore.
No.
But they supported the campaign.
Yeah, but it's, I think it's a bit silly that way.
Thing is, Frank, I remember going to a war graves in France, and ships came over to pick sailors up, and this particular ship, I can't remember the name of it now. Had collected quite a few hundred men off the shore and was heading back. And, you know, in the little chapel that was in this war cemetery, and said, you know, they thought, made it kind of thing, and they were attacked by aircraft, and a bomb went into the, you know, where the smoke come down, what do you call that?
A funnel
blew the ship apart and all.
Yeah, it did. I can remember that.
And in this grave there was about 40 graves for the soldiers who didn't make it. You know,
yeah, obviously. There was quite a lot killed on that.
Well, very much so. And then up the coast was another one. And so, you know, the people who were actually on the shore, people who were in the water bombing, and people who were on the ships, they may not have gone ashore, but they played their part, didn't they?
Mm.
You know, they did.
Yeah.
And same as for every aircraft in there, you've got 50 men on the ground.
Yes.
Yeah. Supporting that aircraft.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so without them, you wouldn't be up in the air, would they?
No. Well, we was in at North Atlantic Landing, we was involved in that, but Mediterranean, what they call it, that. First invasion there, Eisenhower there, weren't he? And all them, they were based in Gib, weren't they, Eisenhower?
I don't know, Frank.
Oh yeah, they were based in Gibraltar.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah. To run that job, I forget what they call it. Huh?
So when the ships went to Lough Ewe, you never went ashore up there or anything?
We never went in Lough Ewe.
No, but so you never went ashore anywhere near there, you just waited.
Yeah. We picked the convoy up from there.
And you were seen then until you got to
Alaska. Yeah. Same as I say, what they had to do to muster a convoy, they had to have somewhere to muster it.
Yeah.
And Lough Ewe was peaked because of the size of it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, a convoy, I would think it had 24 to 25 ships in.
Mm.
It wouldn't be any less.
Mm.
So I mean, they've got to come from America. They've got to come from our various ports. So you know, it would be a big organisation to do it, to organise the ships.
Mm.
And I know some of the Americans transferred their cargo to British ships as well, and they did it in Lough Ewe. But, you know, it must have been a hell of an operation to do such a thing.
They did that in the lock, did they?
Hmm?
They did the cargo transfer in the lock?
Some of them, yeah. I think it was Liberty ships, really, it was parting with company. Because they were all right for certain parts of the world, but they were no good on this big heavy seas. They just broke up.
Hmm.
They were these 10-day wonders, weren't they?
Well, the Atlantic wasn't without its storms.
Well, there's some right storms in the Atlantic, but yeah, I know, I've been in them.
Mm.
I know what they're like. Yeah. But you see, with Russia, you've got on that way, you've got the storms as well as the ice and everything.
And the cold, making the steel brittle.
And everything. I mean, it's cold on Atlantic, but not like it were on Russian convoy.
Mm.
I mean, it's like, I mean, I went on a troll up to Bear Island, I've only done it once.
Mm.
And I said, that's it, I've had enough.
Mm.
Well, it was that much ice on the thing, and this thing was nearly turning over. It was getting top heavy. They spent most of the time knocking ice off.
They lost quite a few that way.
Hey?
They lost quite a few that way.
They lost quite a few, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hard to imagine, really, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Do you think it's important that the future generations know about what happened on the convoy?
Well, I don't think they bothered at all.
Mm.
Well, if anything's like Chesterfield, they won't, because here they've never had any, you know. At one time they used to go and give talks, but that's all gone.
Do you think it's just that people aren't aware? Because it's not a big part of the curriculum at all. I didn't know about it until my mum mentioned it. She only knew about it because she moved to Loch Ewe, and she found out that way.
Yes. Yeah.
But they don't do recent history, do they?
No, they don't.
I did do the Second World War at school, but it was all the politics of the causes of it. It wasn't the actual
logistics
of it. No. Yeah.
No, that's it. No.
So we did the First World War. I don't know if we covered much of the Second World War.
It was all the Weimar Republic and
I can remember learning why it was kicked off with Finland and all this stuff. But that's the only thing that's still in there.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it now, just the pure logistics of 27 million Russians lost their lives and the Russian convoys and the things that were sent over, the volume of the war demands you have to survive.
And that was one of 400 convoy series.
Yes. Mm. But just what, exactly.
Yeah. The logistics involved in the entire war are just mind-boggling.
Now, if you ever wanted to impress the generation of what war is and what it's about, just those logistics and the loss of life and a world war particularly, it's there, isn't it? But you don't see that. That's not, you know, the youth are not told, or it isn't easy for them to see just the personal side of it, or even the logistics side of it and what it actually takes.
We've had
to learn about the politics and the...
We've had a few people come to the exhibition, sort of stumbled across it by chance, and then come to us and say, God, we had no idea about any of this.
No.
We can't believe we didn't know. Well,
where's your exhibition at?
It's at Loch Ewe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got the old gun placements here as well, haven't
you? Yes, we've still got quite a few of those. We've got some batteries.
Yeah,
the old radar station's still there, sort of, isn't it?
There's bits of all sorts sat there. Mm. There's the naval battery at the end of Cove, and there's several anti-air batteries, and there's several small anti-air batteries.
What was the naval battery? What guns were on them?
Oh, it was the big old guns off one of the First World War ships.
Yeah.
Something like 9-inch guns or something.
Yeah.
With a handful of those there from the First World War ships. Three, four, five. I think there was five Oerlikon emplacements around the loch.
Yeah.
Each of which would have a set of four Oerlikons and a command bunker on it.
Well,
there were arrayed around. There was a set of four gun emplacements.
Were they single Oerlikon?
I believe so.
Oh. Only we had twin turrets, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Hydraulic turrets.
Mm.
And they were very accurate. Then they got a Sterling bomb, it was a sight on it,
mm-hmm.
special one, American one, and it was very good in it. When you were shooting, you could calibrate how far away the plane was,
mm-hmm.
and which level and angle to fire your bullets, and you could see them going, because you used to put 1 in 10 used to be
a tracer.
Mm-hmm. So you could watch its path.
Mm-hmm.
You could see them going up to an Egypt plane, yeah, or missing it, whichever the case was.
What calibre were they?
20mm.
20mm.
I think it was 22,
yeah.
I fear with. Mm. But they had incendiaries in them, and you know, armour piercing bullets in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they used to have some that used to explode on contact.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the worst, really, because they did a plane and they just blew apart, they just blew the plane apart.
Mm. Mm.
But they had these, we call them flying shoes, I don't know what make they were a float plane.
Mm-hmm.
A three engine thing. But they could stay up in the air for hours, you see, and they were spotting them, telling the U-boats where the convoys were, mm-hmm. to attack. So it was necessary to get them out of the sky anyway.
Yeah.
You see, the U-boats had one disadvantage, you know, that the guns were frozen.
Mm-hmm.
When they surfaced, the guns immediately froze.
Yeah.
And there's no chance of using them against the aircraft.
Yeah, the U-boats mounted with a deck-mounted anti-aircraft gun was the stupidest thing they ever did.
Yeah.
Whenever you talk to any U-boat historian or any naval historian, all of them say there was no point having it on the surface, and every U-boat commander cursed the things because to use it they had to sit on the surface, and that's when the U-boat's at its most vulnerable.
Well, they had to, but they didn't notice it for 5 minutes though.
Mm.
They had to, get the gun barrel clean.
Mm. And every time they were used, they had to be fully greased so they could be submerged again.
Yeah.
Get them off the U-boat!
Oh, yeah. So that was one good thing in our favour.
Mm.
But that's why they lost a lot of U-boats, of course.
Sat on the surface too long.
Yeah, but you see, our aircraft could take off and bomb them on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And get rid of them. And there's never any survivors of them.
No. You're in a locked metal tube in frozen water.
Well, apart from that, even if they got in the water, within 5 minutes they'd be dead anyway because your blood would be frozen.
I suppose, of course...
The life expectancy of a U-boat crew wasn't very long, was it?
Weeks,
wasn't it?
Yeah. I suppose yourselves on the aircraft carrier had heavy deck coats and thick padding and something to try and keep you warm, but the U-boat crew, of course, were in a hot, sweaty metal tube. They would have been wearing very little, I should imagine.
Oh, yeah.
So their survivability in the water was going to be absolutely minimal.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I've been inside a U-boat. It was on display.
Ah.
And it was terrible inside.
And,
there's one in Germany.
In Germany,
Le Beau, I think it is.
Yeah. Mm.
At Le Beau?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that it? Yeah. Yeah. I've been to see that.
Mm.
It's on a concrete plinth, isn't it?
Inside. I can't imagine much worse. Really,
ever so crude and basic.
Mm.
You know, and there's no room for anything.
Mm.
No, to me, I wouldn't have liked to be in Crew 1. Mm. I mean, even on Atlantic convoys, it must have been bad for them because the weather was still cold on there.
Indeed.
You know, to me.
And they were a long way out to sea there.
Yeah, exactly. We used to head to, there was a zone on, and they called it a dead zone, and Canadian Air Force couldn't reach it, and ours couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the U-boats used to
congregate
there to pick them all up.
Mm.
And they used to go for tankers.
Yeah.
Blast them out. Mm. I've got a list some of them convoys, but we know that activity, although it is. Yeah.
It is a while ago, Frank.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'd done them convoys, we used to come in harbour, a single person's never got to leave. The married one's got 2 days. Mm. We're out again. We're never in.
You were away for 4 years, weren't you, Frank?
Hmm?
My dad said you were only on the activity, it was 4 years.
Hmm.
You never came home for 4 years.
He wouldn't now.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he'd be single, wouldn't he, see?
Yeah, single, yeah.
Married and only got 2 days leave.
Mm-hmm.
That was, and we were ammunition in ship and everything, which is a big job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. You've got to restock, haven't you?
Everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, we had to go and pick aviation fuel up.
Mm-hmm.
They used to come out in boats and tankers in them days. But I always felt sorry for them boats that were bringing them ships home, you know. They had a cat and mouse chance of getting out of the torpedo.
Where was that, Frank?
Well, they just blew up. Imagine an aviation film catching fire.
Mm, I see.
Right? Mm. If they jumped off the ship into water, they were jumping into fire.
Mm.
And that's what happened up at Scotland. If you ever get a book about HMS Dasher, you want to get it.
Mm. We shall research the Dasher.
Mm. Yeah.
Did you keep in touch with many on the activity? Or
but it all died off. Yeah, I mean, I used to go down and see this Vicky Dunn, you know, he was on activity. And he lived in Shoreham, we used to go and visit him, but he died about 3 years ago.
Do you think this had some sort of a pressing need to maybe sort of try and record these things?
Well, I think they ought to have been done years ago, actually, didn't they, when you can remember more.
Yeah.
Do you think we sort of are a bit late already?
I think it is. Right. There's a lot of things you just forget, don't you? Well, you'll know in 70, when 70 years time, you'll know. See how your memory is.
Mm.
Can't remember last week.
You can't remember, that's what I'm saying, Brian. Yeah. I mean, it's a long way. 70 years is a long time to remember anything, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's the stories that are the valuable part, because if I've just got a pair of gunnery gloves hanging on the wall, somebody coming looking at them has got no context and no idea of how, in what situation they were used or under what conditions they were used, you know. And it's the stories that accompany that make the stuff resonate with the visitors.
What I found interesting is just looking at the this is Frank, I've got a picture of my dad as well, but it's only when you actually look at the picture of the seamen and you realise that, you know, they're not teenagers, 17 years of age, 18 years of age.
17,
these are the kind of, you know, my dad's similar. Mm. You know, there'll be kids, you know, and they're thrown into situations that even if you were 20, 30 years older would be difficult to comprehend, and these young lads, that's their start of life, really, isn't it? You know,
well, you never had any life, did you, really, until then?
Well,
you'd had your life, like, but not...
nothing like that.
You'd never got out of your hometown, had you?
My father was a blacksmith, trainee blacksmith.
Yeah.
In Staffordshire. And, you know, I sometimes wonder if he thought, well, I'll sail the world in the Navy, you know, another good war. And he was only 15, 16 when the war started.
Mm. But
I wonder what was in his mind. You were injured, weren't you, Frank?
I lost all my back teeth.
Why were you not invalided out, Frank?
What, during the war? You'd have to drop dead before they invalided out. That wasn't that bad, would I? I'm still here. No, you had to lose a couple of legs and arms or something before they could get rid of you. Well, I mean, you take an activity for a ship that size. There weren't a doctor on board.
Was there not?
No doctors, they were only sick bay tiffers.
So if you had bad injuries, you had to live with
it. It was just too bad, you had to cope with them until you got back to Scapa.
Which could be a few weeks.
Yeah, it's all dependent, you know. You never knew how long you were going to be stuck in up in Russia, they were waiting to... Because they won't let you come back without you got a full convoy of ships.
Mm.
Well, I mean, they can't discharge 24 ships in a day.
No.
I don't suppose there were that many doctors available anyway.
Well, the doctor at Murmansk weren't all that big, you know.
No.
No, but it was the only place stuff could go at that time, wasn't it?
I said doctors on the ships.
Oh, doctors who were... The big ships had them.
Did they?
But activity never did.
Mm.
Battleships and stuff like that.
So do any injuries, you just got patched up.
Got patched up until you got back, yeah.
Unless it was bad enough, they may have considered transferring you to a battleship or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
If there were one available.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, I had a bad accident at sea. I joined merchant service,
mm-hmm.
and I was blown off at mast on bad weather, smashed both my elbows.
Mm-hmm.
I landed on my elbows on deck from about 30 foot.
Mm.
And we was off this fair place, and the lifeboat couldn't get out. So I had to go to America, and I finished up in this naval hospital in Baltimore,
mm.
and I was there 6 months, and then 6 months in New York. So,
you've been in the wars, Frank.
Yeah, I'm lucky to have my arms on.
Yeah.
Mm.
You didn't get treated for a long time, did you?
Well, they were 12 days at sea, and then he said to me, it's touch and go, well, I'll have a go if you're willing to. It'll be a long process. Anything.
You're not doing bad.
No. I've got to praise the Americans for everything, because they were wonderful there.
Yes.
And the people used to come in at weekend and take you out. A little close. They didn't know who you were or anything like that, were it just to take you out. And then when I got into New York, then I was in that Blair General Hospital in New York, they was filming that doctor, I forget his name now, Louis or somebody, Lionel Barrymore, they're in the doctor series that are on telly. They were filming them when I was in there.
Right.
I used to go watching them doing it. Yeah.
You think you might be in a few scenes with you in the back?
Oh, yeah. I don't know what we thought at the time, like, really, I just wanted to pass the day away. But I've got both arms in a bloody sling. You felt good, definitely.
You have to be fed.
Mm-hmm. I started to manage it when I got to New York.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I had to be,
Were there many injuries on the... Were there many injuries on the activity to these convoys?
Well, I think we probably lost about 6 or 8, something like that. Mm.
And what would that be with, when you were attacked or as a result
of
that?
Yeah, when we were attacked, and apart from that, we got some damage to the fuel system, and there was a shell burst on the pipework. Anyway, it was in the engineering department, and they... The two blokes died down there trying to sort it out. And then there was others overcome with films that bad, they had to be whipped ashore.
Mm.
That's aviation people, not the best stuff to be reading in, is it?
No.
Made a mess of them.
Doesn't make you think of all those ships that went out.
Oh, bloody hell.
And I'm sitting here with somebody and my dad who survived. I wouldn't even be sitting here if...
We're lucky.
Just we were lucky.
Yeah, luck was in.
Because, you know, a lot of ships, a lot of men never made it home. And, those
I think the last estimate was 7,000.
Was it?
Hmm.
What was that, Frank?
7,000. They got killed on Russian convoys.
Mm. Of about 30,000 troops involved, 30,000 seamen involved.
Atlantic convoys, there were no end kills on them.
No, I mean on the Russian convoys, there was about 30,000 personnel involved.
All together.
In the campaign.
Oh, yeah.
About 7,000 killed is just over 1 in 4.
Yes. Yeah.
So
but there's also others that were badly injured.
Mm.
It's not added on the list.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's died from the injuries since the war.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty poor odds of survival in the Arctic convoys.
Well, you had to get another chance. If your ship was sunk, you was in, and you froze, and your blood froze up. So if your blood freezes, it can't circulate, can it?
Mm-hmm.
So your heart stops.
Mm.
I think they gave them 5 minutes in the water, and they had it. Yeah.
Mm.